This is Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.
Like, you gotta do the work. You gotta show up and just do the work.
Monday. Another episode of Marcus Whitney Live. Hope everybody is hanging in there right now. I'm almost at a loss for words, but not quite. I'm glad to be here with you all today. I have a friend on the show today who is an inspiration to me. He has accomplished so much. He is such an incredible thinker in the worlds of risk management. Now in terms of digital currencies, he is the founder of Risk Cooperative and the vice chair of the Libra Association. My good friend, Dante Disparte. Dante, I want to welcome you to the show today. I want to say that I'm hoping that your family is okay, and hope that the events over the weekend in D.C., your home city, didn't affect you too much, my man.
Marcus, great to be with you. And likewise, I too count on you as an inspiration and hope you and yours are doing well. We have really sort of a triple threat on our hands as a society and as a planet. The pandemic, I think, has really put a bright light on many aspects of our country and the economy, and it really has highlighted many areas of vulnerability. Now you have this social cohesion is hitting a tipping point at the same time. So, and then not as if, matters couldn't be worse, we're also facing sort of an economic crisis that is already at depression levels. So with that, we have to, have a lot of purpose and a lot of focus on how we get through this.
Yeah, man, I agree. So, we were... We had an entirely different plan, and then the world had plans for us, right, in terms of what to discuss today. So, let's just start with the fact that we're obviously in incredible times, and both of our cities were host to protests over the weekend, those protests ended up evolving into, situations that could affect safety of people, property, things of that nature. And, we're definitely at this point where we're at this point where the American public is not going to accept the same answers for the same problems happening over and over and over and over and over and over again. What you and I talked about a little bit in the run-up to the show is that, we're builders, we're optimists. We are, we always have kind of a can-do attitude, and there's much, obviously, because of our heritage that we feel in this moment. But also, there are certain things for which it's difficult to have the right words for. It's difficult to know how to respond. What has this morning even been like for you? Like, let's just start with that, man. I mean, my morning was crazy. I don't know about yours, but my morning was absolutely nuts. So, what was your morning like today, man?
Yeah, look, I mean, you both of us are not the type of people that are often lost for words, but I must say, the weekend has been a heavy one, right? In terms of, for once, many people who know me consider me kind of a risk whisperer, and I get the phone call when something strange is going on in the world or in their business or in, across the spectrum, risk and complexity and resilience is what I've dedicated my life to. And, this one is obviously not an abstraction. It's not happening around us. It's happening to us. And it's very close to home. I live in the city, Washington, D.C., a very stratified city. I've put in an enormous amount of time, my wife and I, in addressing social equity issues in the city. Our kids go to public schools in the city. So we're deeply committed to this. And, you know, taking the optimistic view of what has transpired in our country over the last few days is that this is, like many things that we're addressing right now as a planet, this is the drumbeat of history coming at us again and reminding us again that we have a lot of work yet to be done. And so while it is incredibly nuanced how we got here, what is clear is what we need to do now. And I think, you know, I'm very heartened by the fact that the vast majority of the protesters are peaceful, but I'm incredibly heartened by the fact that the protests themselves are diversified, that this is not a single issue matter any longer for one group of people to deal with, Black Americans, but it's now a matter that has pulled the silent majority off the sidelines. And so much of the work we have to do, whether it's economic equity, social justice, legal reform, systemic reform, or otherwise, has always labored under a conspiracy of silence.
Right.
And if there's any bright light in these very dark times, it's the fact that it's no longer one group trying to address these issues. It now seems like there's a consensus forming around it.
Yeah. I definitely feel that as well. I also feel there's this very... It's the only way to say it is weird. I feel this very weird pulling back of the curtain that is happening right now, where the truths that we all know within the Black community, right? The truths that we all know are now becoming open points for discussion. And I think we've always known how muted we've had to be to baseline survive, but then especially when you start to get into wanting to do well in this society, you know, you want your kids to do well, you want to be able to provide, I'm not talking about being rich and fancy, I'm just talking about doing well, okay? We've always known that saying certain things that were true, were, you know, undeniably true to us, and really, quite frankly, just objectively true, do not benefit you, right? It does not benefit you to lay clear that we, as the descendants of the African people that were stolen and enslaved, still bear that trauma and the disparities in what we experience versus what other people in this country experience is still tied to that. But there has been this, there's been this disallowance of that conversation for so long. And it's like, now it seems like that's starting to crack. And I gotta say, man, you know, I'm 44 years old, 44 and a half years, you know, like that's weird. You know what I mean? Like that is not something I'm used to.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a confluence of forces and factors that are coming to a head, because oftentimes people say to themselves, that event should have been the event that should have been the straw that broke the camel's back. And then you find that it wasn't, and many more come and many more go.
Yeah.
But I think if you think about this perfect storm situation that we're all in, and we really are all in it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, we have 40 million people have lost their employment. And undoubtedly, if you were economically vulnerable going into this pandemic and into this crisis, that would be a reality that would be visited disproportionately on people of color and minority communities. That's just a hard reality. You then have nearly 30 million people have lost access to employer-provided healthcare. So another aspect that I know is very close to home to you and the work that you do with Health Further and your portfolio of work and practice. That's another aspect of the reality, that your economic fortunes are tethered to this very, very tenuous relationship that you have with employment and economic mobility. And then you now have this third dimension. And none of these fixes are easy, but all of these fixes require an awakening. And I think if there's anything that we can do, just like the great wars and other past crises of this type of scale produce new institutions, new trade-offs, the New Deal effectively was born out of a crisis and born out of the Great Depression, is that this time around, hopefully this awakening, when the riots and the protests subside, that this awakening does also produce the type of public discourse at the local level, all the way up to the federal level, on how do we get real structural change.
Yeah.
This just can't be a moment. It has to produce a movement, and then it ultimately has to produce change.
Yeah. Yeah. So your expertise, you have several areas of expertise, but maybe the longest standing one is in the area of risk. When this whole pandemic really started to set upon us, I think it was probably when the stock market bottom started to, fall out. I texted you and I said, "Hey man, I need counsel." Because
I remember that call.
Yeah. Cause you're my risk guy. Right. And I will not forget the words that you said to me, on that call. You said, "Marcus, I'm in the business of risk. I've spent my life studying risk. I've written the book on risk, specifically global risk, global agility. And this is not risk. This is uncertainty." And I didn't forget those words. And quite frankly, they've better prepared me for the weeks as they've unfolded, because, I've sort of anchored in this idea that the only thing that is certain right now is uncertainty. So I've been able to kind of roll with the punches, per se, and stay active, controlling the things I can control when I can control them. The ability to create, the ability to take care of myself, to try to be positive as much as I can, to try to find my voice in this moment. Since that call, it's been maybe 2 months. Time has been flying, man. It's been maybe 2 months. I'm not expecting for you to have changed your perspective on that, but now that we've been in months of uncertainty, have you learned anything throughout this process? Have there been any insights that have popped out to you?
Yeah. Well, when you framed it well and powerfully, because the distinction really, really does matter between risk and uncertainty. Risk, mathematically measurable, you could start to get, some probabilities out of it. But uncertainty is exactly where we are. And this is why it's deeply uncomfortable for people. You could almost think about the choices we have to make at the household and individual level are the type of choices usually reserved for doctors and for the battlefield, kind of Hippocratic decision making. Do I go out and imperil my society and my community under quarantine and social distancing right now? Every choice we make now has, it's hitting a deeper wellspring of who we are. And that, I think, is also an important moment in time for us, which is that, I've always said values matter most when it is least convenient. So after 9/11, for example, the Geneva Conventions on the treatment of prisoners of war mean a heck of a lot more than they do in peacetime. And right now, as the country and the world is watching the country unravel from coast to coast, city to city, the question of what will we stand for is laid bare, right? The choice of social distancing and breaking social distancing for this really emotive national protest that we're now having is also coming with consequence. Mm. No matter what, statistically, the likelihood that the United States would face a second wave of the coronavirus pandemic was already upon us. Now it's pretty evident that that second wave is not only coming, it may be even bigger than the first, mm-hmm. In part because we've quickly broken any gains we've had on flattening the curve. Those are hard choices to make. And guess which communities are going to pay the heaviest price for that, right?
Right.
The very communities that are out on the street protesting right. for social justice. So right. my hope again, and my deep admonishment again, is that on the other side of this, as quickly as some are picking up stones and breaking windows, which again is not the majority of this protest in the least, then let's hope people also register to vote, get counted in the census, and make their will heard through the discourse that a democracy allows you to shape it. And so I think there's a lot of looking ourselves in the mirror as a community and as a society. But what's on the docket when you talk about the difference between risk and uncertainty is value systems of the country, of a community, of our cities, and how we get on from here.
It does seem like the convergence of challenges and issues don't allow for the kind of complex assessments that they deserve. It's like, we only have time for one major storyline at a time, right? You know what I mean? And so it's like, here, like we're on this very, look, this has to be dealt with. Okay. Like this unstoppable wave of oppression that manifests in brutality against Black people. That is not all police brutality, by the way. It's, you know, police brutality is a particularly disgusting form of it, but you know, the brutality against Black people in America extends beyond that. You know, this incessant pattern of this has to be addressed. And at the same time, we don't have a cure for this virus, right? Like this was always going to be a long-standing, it was always going to be a slug to deal with this. And the challenge of could we figure out a collectively effective way to manage the spread while at the same time making sure that people's economic futures at least have a chance, you know, which we have proven we can't do, or protect vulnerable people, which we're proving that we can't do. What do you have to say to, what are you saying to yourself? Whatever you're saying to yourself would work for somebody like me. You know what I mean? Who is an optimist, who is a builder by design, I'm not afraid to tackle these issues. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not afraid to speak about these issues, and be honest about these issues. In fact, to a degree, I have this platform. I have, you know, whatever amount of, audience that I have an obligation to speak about these issues. Mm. And at the same time, they are complex. They are complex. There's multiple things happening at one time. You know, how are you processing your ability to exist in this moment relative to the complexity and the convergence of issues?
Yeah, well, so our mutual friend and my colleague Les Williams, you know, made the observation that past is sort of prologue here, right? That in the 1960s, we had human ingenuity and space flight taking off, while at the same time that reality coexisted with civil commotion and disturbances and riots across the country. And so you fast forward to today, to 2020, literally we have the same two things coexisting yet again.
Yeah.
And one could argue that the cynic would say, well, we haven't made any progress because the same historical patterns are repeating themselves. But this is where I think we break from history, right? In the same way that human ingenuity can move us forward and develop, you know, the type of power, be it in the private sector, in the public sector, that can break barriers and that can move people along. I think these types of moments in time shouldn't ever happen in vain. And I think rarely do they. I think every single time, the reason it's deeply unsatisfying for a builder like yourself and deeply unsatisfying for our society, especially ones born with this in their hands, who are used to instant gratification, is that we're now facing a moment in our country where we need to address issues that require not electoral cycle timelines, but decade spans.
Yes.
If we cast our eyes decades into the future, we could ask ourselves, and we'll be able to look back at this pandemic and this trifecta, the pandemic, the economic crisis, and this social moment where Black America says, enough is enough, do you see me now? And the rest of the country acknowledges that they now see these issues. And we'll look back and say, a decade from today, that was a moment where real change happened. In the same way that the women's suffrage movement had to happen over a big span, that equal rights, marriage equality, the end of slavery, the civil rights movement, a lot of these gains can't be taken for granted. But none of those gains happen in the electoral cycle, which I should also add, none of them also happen in the quarterly earnings cycle on Wall Street.
Amen.
We just simply need a longer social horizon, and then you could look at these things relatively optimistically. You know, the old expression, when you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah.
But on the other end of this, we have to find a paradise.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess for me, that circles back to the morning that I've had. So let me just tell you about my morning, which kind of also extends into yesterday. The community of people, you know, the community of people in my life is a diverse community of people, right? You know, I'm fortunate to have many amazing Black people in my life, family, friends, colleagues, peer mentors who, you know, we're able to console each other, support each other, lift each other up in this moment. And that's incredible, you know. And also, I've also got plenty of white people in my life. And I cannot tell you how many conversations I've had in the last 24 hours, either clarifying for them. Actually, no, they're all clarifying for them, right? Like trying to orient them around what this is actually about, right? Because the thing that I know is that they've been miseducated. You know, like that storyline about everything being taken care of and we're, you know, and we did it. It's, you know, it's just as it is not true that we haven't done anything, right? We absolutely have made progress. There's no question. My life is demonstrably freer than my father's life. And my father's life is demonstrably freer than his father's life. So, you know, no question have we made progress. And at the same time, the inequities persist. And they are rooted in something that has not been fully resolved. It's not. It's not fully resolved. And that, I feel like before we can get to the decades-long thing, it's like first we got to understand what we are actually dealing with, mm-hmm. right? You know, to me, that's been the amazing thing about this moment is for so long, I just haven't like cared whether or not they understood whether or not that was what we were dealing with. I was like, man, I got to survive. You know what I mean? I got to survive. I'm going to try and make an impact. I'm here on life for a limited amount of time. You know, I'm going to try to make the most of this time, right? You know, but it is an interesting thing to really, as a Black person, sit here and really think through, wow, you know, before we can even start working, we got to like get on the same page about like, yeah. We got to get on the same page about resolution because we're not on the same page about resolution. Right. You know what I mean? Like not even in the same universe right now, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's unquestionably complicated, right? I mean, the issues and the dimensions are incredibly complicated, incredibly nuanced. But what isn't, and where there is zero abstraction, is this question of right and wrong, and the ability to sort of recognize that these inequities, and you could argue this is partly courtesy of the civilian, you know, armed with an iPhone and armed with these videos, some of these happening in such a short amount of time, the terrible footage in Central Park, you know, laid bare, I think, for everybody, exactly how this type of power is being exercised, how consistently it is being exercised. I've advocated that perhaps the advent of the iPhone isn't increasing the incidence of these types of terrible events.
No.
It's just capturing more of them that were already always there. But do you also have to acknowledge that in the long term, wherever this ends up, we have to come out of this in a society that calibrates these issues and finds equity in these issues. And then it extends across everything from basic economic security to basic enfranchisement to basic access to the opportunity ladder that really makes this country incredibly unique. All of this has to start coming together. And you know, on the other end of it, I also don't want our communities to be set back. DC was a scene of terrible riots, as was much of the country back in the 60s. And it took 30 years of economic progress before many parts of the city ever saw the first dollar of investment coming back. So there's also a trade-off here. This is not a war of all against all. It shouldn't be a Pyrrhic victory where people have social justice, but there's nothing left on the other side. So we have to figure out equilibrium in approach and responsible, committed ways to exercising these calls for social justice. The change happens locally.
Yeah, I think we're saying the same thing. This moment is about the murder of George Floyd. I would never want to take that away from his family, okay? This moment is about the murder of George Floyd, and it is about the system behind that murder, right? And that system has economic implications. That system has healthcare implications, right? That system has education implications. That system, it's a system. It's a system, right? And we all, if there's anything we should all be learning right now, is that that system impacts us all. There is no win-lose in this. There's only ultimately win-win or lose-lose. Ultimately. You can have the short-term win-lose scenario, but that won't last long. Eventually, the uncertainty will come after you.
Yeah. And you know, again, I think we should be in the medium to long term, back to the question of how am I working my way through this, and not as a risk whisperer trying to process this as if it was abstract, but as someone who's deeply involved and deeply committed and who has experienced many of these very issues myself. You know, we have to look at it as if none of these sacrifices are in vain.
Yes.
The names, and there are so many, there are far too many to count of people who have sacrificed themselves in the spirit of advancing civil rights. My own grandfather was a pioneer in the civil rights movement in 1947, donned a turban from New York and took an abolitionist train to Mobile, Alabama to officiate a wedding. And because he donned a turban and looked exotic, he was able to ride in the front of in the non-segregated car, in the white car, and then officiate a wedding in Alabama, and you know, was treated as if he was a foreign dignitary, because we could accept back then that if you were exotic or foreign, you weren't Black. And so I think that, you know, there's a collection of sacrifices that we have to look back upon as guides right now. But this also speaks to one of the biggest voids I think we face in our country, and frankly, in many aspects of our communities, which is there's a void of leadership. People are looking for the moral compass and the guides. And when you look to your left and you look to your right and you ask, who's going to do something about this? It often points to you.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of spirit of individual responsibility and accountability and what can you do individually to make a difference right now is what's going to matter. It's the only thing you could latch onto. Again, back to the point about uncertainty and risk, is all you could latch onto in uncertain times are your value systems, your actions, and what you could do one day at a time. This is a crisis of epic proportions. The three things that have hit our country and the world all at once are all happening at exactly the same time. But in order for them not to be in vain, we have to ask ourselves what we can do. We shouldn't wait for anybody else to do it. We have to do it ourselves.
Dante, thank you, man. I love you, bro. Thank you, man. Your counsel is so important to me personally. I'm glad I get to brag that you're a friend of mine on my show. I feel like you've raised the quality of my show here pretty quickly. So man, thank you for just being willing to spend some time here. And I just thank you. Thank you. And I hope you and your family do well and are safe in DC. And I hope that you know, people are taking care of each other there.
This too shall pass, my dear friend. Thank you.
Awesome. After this, I know you're going to want to follow Dante. You can on Twitter at @DDesparte, and also check him out on LinkedIn. He is also a very consistent contributor to Forbes. The guy is brilliant. I don't know anyone better in the world on the topic of risk. So please do follow him and support him in what he's doing. Also, this is the first time I'm going to announce it. I'm also going to put out a post here shortly. But I have a go live date for the book that I've been working on for 5 years. And it feels like it feels like it could not be coming at a more important or scary time for me to put this out. But I'm going to step out on faith and do that. So Create and Orchestrate is coming out June 30th of this year. And I am just really excited to get this this work out into the world. It is the hardest thing I've ever done. And I think it's also probably the most meaningful work I've ever done. It is all the wisdom that I've learned over the last 20 years in terms of economic mobility and what I believe is not the only, but certainly one of the key contributing factors to the enduring inequity that we experience in this world. This is the book that I wish I had throughout my journey, and I offer it humbly as one of the tools that may help us get to the other side of this mountain. I've got a podcast. All of my shows that I do here live get archived to it. Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe. You can find those on Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeartRadio, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, if you're watching this, then you are also following me on social. So just want to thank everyone for the support. Even while we were going live, I've gotten a ton of text messages and comments. So thank you for just the kind messages from everybody. And yeah, everyone, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. This is such an important moment in time, and I know none of us will ever forget it. But until tomorrow, let's build a new normal. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.